Let me just say, we're about halfway through our time together, and I sure have enjoyed it. I've enjoyed getting to know you and hearing your comments and your support and encouragement to me, and just your interactions in class and outside, getting to know you guys a little better. I'm not that widespread of a teacher around Briarwood. I've taught a lot of times in certain places, but I wonder if the teachers around here who go to class have this same experience, but I feel like, well, can this be my second home, my second membership in Sunday school class? I just really, really enjoyed my time. Thank you for that. Let's see. Make sure this is going to show. Yep. What we've got going on is we spent the first half of this semester time talking about the very first section of our pyramid here. You know, as we went over the first week, we're here, and that's intentional. We spend a lot of time talking about that, and relative to that, just a little bit on the rest of them. But I feel like that's important, plus the philosophy is my favorite part of it, and so since I'm the teacher, I get to choose. But we are going to move on from that and talk about the next step, and we'll spend a few weeks talking about different arguments for God's existence. Now, just to make a couple of remarks about that, remember what the goal is. What we're doing here is we're showing and trying to make a persuasive case why Christianity is true without saying because the Bible says it's true. The Bible we hold as an authority, but it makes it that much more strong of a case and persuasive whenever we can point and say, yes, but there's also the Bible does self-confirm itself, and we're not Christian solely because not everybody is Christian solely because of a path of evidence into Christianity. But if that's what's slowing you down, we've got a pretty full book of natural revelation that we can point to that leads us to the same location. All right, so got that reminder done, and I think I pointed it out, but thanks to Kristen, she came up with that slide for me. But all right, so what we are going to talk about then, we're going to start with talking about the Kalam cosmological argument. Now, this is an argument that's been around since the Middle Ages. It was actually formulated by Muslim scholars. So that kind of gives you a clue as to what we can do with this argument. Remember, at the end of last week, I had a slide up that said "slow down ahead" or something like that, or "no sudden moves." What we're talking about, what I meant by that then, is we want to be modest in what we do and say with our arguments, and not jump too far ahead of what they actually will prove. So each of these arguments will give us a picture about, in this case, first causes. What was the first cause of the universe? And what kind of attributes can we come up with about this first cause? And, just spoiler here, what we're going to end up with is we're going to see a number of properties about this first cause that coincide nicely with the description of God that we find in the Bible. And it'll give us a glimpse. All right. So we have many different arguments that we can use to show that God actually exists. And we'll see that these arguments do make a very strong case, cumulatively especially. And so we're going to go through some of those. I, of course, did not come up with these arguments myself. And so there's that being said, especially in a limited amount of class time that we have, a whole lot more can be said about them, but I'm hoping to give a good characterization of them for you, and then we can have some good conversation in here about them, I hope. But I want to try to explain to you in the time that we have, easy to understand and intuitive way, the power of these arguments. So, let me just kind of skip ahead because we talked about this already. All right. So we're talking then the cosmological argument, Kalam cosmological argument, structures around causes and beginnings. This is what we're talking about. Of course, and this is internal. You know, we're not going to necessarily lead with this with our non-Christian friends, except to say that the Bible does say that in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. And that's the important part about this. We can also see that in Romans 1:20, it says that for his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived even since the creation of the world and the things that have been made, so that they, the unbelievers, are without excuse. And then St. Augustine, I believe it is, has talked about how we have two books that God has given us to show about him. We have the book of nature, and then we have the Holy Scriptures. One of his general revelation that points us towards theism, and then the special revelation of the Scriptures gives us the details about our theology and about Christ and his work. All right, let's see. So when we're talking about the natural revelation, which is what this is, it turns out we can discover quite a lot about the cause of the universe and some attributes, the invisible attributes that we can perceive and reason through to get towards, that does show us that there's a intelligent first creator of the universe that leaves us without excuse to deny it. Did I skip something? Okay. All right, so this is the argument, and what I'm trying to do here is one of the things that I necessarily had to skip or else spend another week talking about philosophy and the foundations of it is the structure of arguments. But you want them to be in their best form. You can kind of distill them down into premises that lead to a conclusion. And that's what we'll try to do because it makes it most understandable, and it makes it, if you can make a good argument, irresistible in a certain way. So what we've got here is two premises that lead to a conclusion, and this is the argument. And each word in this is very carefully selected, so kind of think through what we're talking about here, and I'll go through it in a little bit of time and detail, too. It says the first premise is that everything that begins to exist has a cause. The second premise is the universe began to exist, and so therefore you can easily see what the conclusion of that would be. One leads to another. The universe, therefore, has a cause. So this is a deductive-style argument, which means if the premises are true, then the conclusion follows irresistibly. It's in a valid form. So what we need to do then, the task for us in this class, as we're understanding the argument, and then your task whenever you're talking about this with someone else, will be to examine the premises and find out, are the premises true? Because, as I say, if the premises are true, the conclusion follows. So let's talk about it. The premise one, everything that begins to exist has a cause. This matches our uniform and repeated experience in the world. Everything that has to do with life and science, indeed science is based on this rule right here. Without it, there would be no science to do. Science is one definition of science could be a search for causes. To deny this would be to say that some things just spontaneously appear out of nothing with no cause and no reason. And there is some arguments when we're talking about on the quantum level that some people will say that this does happen. But I think that it's a little beyond the scope of what I can cover here in this class to get into that too much. But we're talking about microscopic things and what we observe. And even there, the counter argument to that is, well, we're only able to observe part of it doesn't mean that that's actually what's going on. But our normal experience is that if something begins to exist, it has a cause. Things come from other things. And if we deny that, we're going in the face of everything we know. In fact, we should be, if that's not true, then we should be seeing things like bicycles and humans and balls and buildings to be popping out of nothing into existence. But we never see that kind of thing because we think that would be absurd because we know that things have causes, okay? The burden of proof then is on the person who would assert that this is not true. I have not seen, as a person who studied apologetics and arguments against Christianity, I have not seen anything that comes close to a persuasive argument to disprove this premise. Like I said, the closest thing I can see is something about the quantum physics, and on that's such a new field, and I don't think it's very well supported in the arguments that they try to make, or that can be extrapolated into other things persuasively. So I think that we can put this to rest and call this true. Does anybody have anything? Does this spark any thoughts in your mind so far? Okay. Well, let's talk about the second premise then. The second premise is the universe began to exist. And the question is, did the universe come into existence at some point? And if that's true, if it did, then why did it come into existence? There has to be a reason. Especially if we accept that everything that begins to exist has a cause. If the universe can be shown that it did come into existence at some point, where previously it wasn't, what do we make of that, and what do we say about about what caused it? I'm trying to decide what we need to cut and what we can really go into well in here. If we say that the universe did not begin to exist, then that means it's always existed or that it doesn't exist now. Well, obviously we are in it and it does exist. If we are to say then that it's always existed, then we have a problem as in terms of infinities. Now, this is a concept that's a little hard to get your mind around. We might suffice it to say that we have actual infinities versus potential infinities. Potential infinities, what we're talking about there is things such as mathematics. Whenever we say, can you count to the highest number? Well, you say no, because you can keep adding one and you always get to something else and there's never an end to it. But whenever we're talking about an actual infinity, that's something that cannot be realized. So if we say, what's the number of days between now and eternity, you can count the numbers that the days that have elapsed, but you can't ever count all of the way to the end. There, you can always add one more. The same thing to be said in infinity past. We can't say the universe has been around forever and it's been around this many days. That blank there of how many days it's been around, you can't fill that number in. And so what that means is you can't traverse backwards in time to the first point because it's forever. And you can't ever cross an infinity because whenever you have, this is the part that's hard, a little tough to understand, so forgive me. If I can't explain it very clearly, it's because it's not very clear to understand. But we kind of have to talk about it a little bit so you can see why this doesn't work. Let's imagine that you have a library full of books. In fact, it's so full of books, it's full of an infinite number of books. Now, this is an analogy when we talk about the infinite number of days into eternity past. So you have a library full of an infinite number of books. What if you take, how many books do you have left if you take out one book from an infinite number of books? Who said it? Infinity. You still have an infinity. Okay, what if I take out not a certain specified number of books? What if I take out half of the books in an infinite collection? How many do I have left? Say it again. You have an infinity amount still. So you have you start to come up with these absurdities. So I have an infinite number of books, and I've cut it in half, but I still have the same amount. So you have half as much, and you have the same amount. You can start to see you come into absurdities whenever you start talking about actual infinites rather than potential infinites. And potential infinites is useful whenever you're doing mathematics, but as soon as you start turning it into real items, you start to see it doesn't work. You can't actualize an infinite. I hope that helps. So besides this problem of infinity, what is why can't the universe be infinitely old? Well, for one thing, we saw that the everything that begins to exist has to have a cause. And what we're going to talk about next is the appearance that the universe came to exist into existence from some point. We see from talking about infinites that it can't be infinitely old, or else we would never have gotten to this point today. Let's see. Yeah, so I'm just going to move on. There's more that we could say about infinites, but hopefully the library analogy helps you see well enough why that doesn't work. So the second law of thermodynamics, does somebody know that and can sum it up for me? Right. Well, that's a one word definition of it. The second law of thermodynamics is basically that entropy increases, and not order, over time in a closed system. So if you have, this isn't a perfect analogy, but let's just say you have a pot of water on the stove and you raise it to a boiling temperature, and then you turn off the heat and stand back, what's going to happen to it over time? Well, the heat will dissipate, and the water will cool down. You have energy loss, that's right. And it becomes neutral with the surrounding temperature and the surrounding conditions. This is, in a sense, what heat death we're talking about. Over time, if you look into our future of our solar system and our universe, that's what we're heading towards. In other words, you know that the sun is a burning ball of fire that eventually will, if not intervened on, will burn out. It will grow cold, and the surrounding temperature of the solar system will equalize into absolute zero. And so will the rest of the universe over time. Now, we're not talking about that you need to go buy yourself a warm coat for tomorrow, but over millions of years, as you project forward, as you look at the science of it, we'll see that that's what's happening. Because the universe, as we're in terms of our discussion here, is a closed system that was infused with energy to start with, and then it's slowly running down over time. And we as Christians, of course, said it was the Lord who started things off, who infused the energy into our system, and can therefore infuse more energy into it as if he desires to. And you know, we talk about the new heavens and the new earth, and perhaps that's what he has in mind at that point. But the point is, the second law of thermodynamics says that over time, the level of heat decreases, the amount of entropy increases until it equalizes and there is no more. The applicability to what we're talking about here, this goes back to our infinite. If we had an infinitely old universe, we would already be in heat death. Because it's going, no matter what time you put to that, if the universe is infinitely old, we would have already reached that point, wouldn't we? Does that make sense why that is? right. Furthermore, we can see this illustration that what we have here is, as astronomers have identified, that our universe is expanding and not contracting or standing still. Imagine that I have a balloon and I start to inflate it, and I inflate it and I inflate it. Well, it's getting bigger and bigger. Now, what happens if we rewind time and I let the air out of the balloon? Well, it's going to contract back to metaphorically back to a single point, right? If we go backwards in time and look at our universe, if we're expanding, then that means backwards in time, it's reducing back to a certain point. Again, we see that it can't be infinitely old because it's coming back to a certain point. And this is another illustration of it. It's just pointing out this is, I don't get much of a point on there, but on the far right there, how the universe is shown to be expanded to a certain point. As you go back in time, it gets smaller, 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 until we get back to this point of singularity where the universe began. Now, I can't not talk about this a little bit. I don't want to raise a big controversy at this point, but the cosmological argument does trade on an old universe. Just so you'll know, the PCA holds that there are a number of orthodox positions on this subject, that as far as young Earth, old Earth, there's four different positions that Hugh Ross accurately summarizes for what the PCA holds. For the record, I tend to be an old Earth kind of guy, but and in that regards, I'm also sharing it with Dr. Barker. But if you tend to believe towards a young Earth position, well, then you hold that in common with Pastor Reeder. So what I want to say then is the first slide that I showed is the important one that said, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The details about if it's young Earth, old Earth, framework, or something else within those four held beliefs in the PCA is not that important. It's certainly not worth dividing ourselves over. Okay, so I feel like that's important to say. For me, the reason some of the reasons that I hold an old Earth, one is I do think the scientific evidence is compelling, but in addition to that, it also gives me another point of common ground with many of the atheists and such that I might talk to. That alone is not a good enough reason for me to adopt a view, but it helps as it happens. Because a lot of them will also have the same view. And so this ancient universe view, as we're talking about, if you haven't put a name to it yet, is the Big Bang. It works with the Big Bang. And so I don't want you to be, as Christians, afraid of that term, because a Big Bang still needs a Big Banger, doesn't it? And it's compatible with a reading of the first two chapters of Genesis, as well as other passages in the Bible that show God started it off. You still have to have a lot of intelligence and power to do this, as we will further discuss. So this second premise of the Kalam argument is largely supported by modern scientific observation and evidence of the Big Bang, which is this single point in time and space which expanded eons ago into the universe that we have now. That's kind of the second picture here. We will revisit some of this whenever I start talking to you in weeks ahead about intelligent design. This very much is in support of that, as is the young Earth view. But the point of this, if you take the old Earth view or talk about the Big Bang, is, again, the Big Bang needs a Big Banger. And this is when we're talking about causes still. We have to account for that. The Big Bang, in other words, does not remove the need for God. In my view, it underscores it, makes it even more necessary. All right. Unless you have something that you want to say specifically about that, I would kind of like to move on from that because I don't want to get into a big controversial discussion between young earth and old earth, contentious as it can be. But I'd be happy to talk to you about it after class if you wish.
Hey, John, maybe you could mention this. To give equal time, next August we're going to have a conference here with Del Taggart and with the director of his Genesis History Book. It's just history. And they're a very young earth creation. And so that whole conference will be based on that. So equal time.
So, you've said equal time twice now. I don't know if that's a colloquialism. I just spent 5 minutes on it. I have a feeling they're going to do a little bit more than that. So you're going to bring in another conference to do Old Earth, right?
We've already done that one. We did that a few years ago.
That was the equal time at that point. Okay, so I'm going to move along from this because this is another... Okay, so this is kind of the point that I want us to end our talk about the age of the universe on, to say, St. Augustine again, quoting him, he says, in essentials, unity, and non-essentials, liberty, and in all things, charity. So if we disagree on the age of the universe, as we might, maybe not in this room, but with other believers, as we might talk about Reformed theology, for example, some of the things that aren't crucial central portions of Christianity, we need to keep this this quote in mind. The age of the universe is not one of these essentials. All right. I want to make a few comments then about some alternate theories to try to explain around some of the observations that we made in the Kalam argument. Because at this point, I feel like we've adequately talked about the two premises, and if we've defended those well, then it leads, as I said, to the unescapable conclusion that the universe had a cause. Now, notice that my conclusion is not, therefore, Jehovah created the universe. Remember, we're taking baby steps. But some of the alternate views on that would be things such as the steady state. I think we've kind of put that to rest. The steady state basically says that the universe is as it is right now and has been through eternity past, and it's never changed. Well, with the observation of the expansion of the universe, that kind of makes that not make any sense, as well as when we start thinking about infinities again and actual infinities and not being able to traverse an infinite number of days to ever get to the present. I don't think we need to say much more about that. Another theory that attempts to modify and salvage the steady state theory is by postulating a continuous expansion of the universe. In other words, that it says that it is and has eternally been expanding out. Yeah, maybe from some central point, but it's just expanding out from there. And as it does, new matter is being spontaneously produced and coming into being in the center, because we're seeing things continuously coming out. That's the only way we can really explain that. We'll talk about that in the next point, yes. But yes, the second point then, we're violating our first premise, and that is that our continued and uniform experience is that things do not pop into existence out of nothing. That includes suns and planets and galaxies and solar systems as well. So we would have to postulate some sort of reasonable mechanism to redeem this theory, and there is none that exists. So then the third model then is the oscillating universe. And, oscillating, if you have any kind of like electrical engineering experience, you know what we're talking about, but oscillating means this right here. If you see a chart and it's going up and down, that's an oscillation. So what it is trying to say here is that, yes, we are expanding right now, but over time it'll lose energy and the gravity of everything will pull it back in on itself. And it will go, then after a while, we would observe a collapsing universe. And so what happens then is it collapses in on itself and rebounds back out again. And the collapse and produces so much energy that it bangs back out again. Well, I can't find my place because I accidentally advanced the slide. So it cycles between expansion and contraction in which the gravitational forces cause the universe to collapse back on itself and then it will expand back out. There's a couple of problems. One is, as you said, that third law would necessitate that we would run out anyway. And furthermore, the force of gravity, as it's been measured, is insufficient to pull the back all in together. Therefore, it's not possible through this means. It appears that we are in a one-way expanding universe. I'm going to try to speed up a little bit just to get through these last couple of slides, if you'll bear with me here. But these are some things that people have proposed to try to get around the conclusion. One is redefining nothing. Lawrence Krauss does that in his book, where he talks about nothing, but really he's talking about quantum vacuums and things that are decidedly not nothing. They may be really small, but let's don't confuse something really small with nothing, because it's still something. What we're talking about is a metaphysical nothing, absolutely nothing, and you can't, from nothing, nothing comes, as a famous philosopher has said. There has to be a starting point, and anything that can explain this, you have to use causation, and we're talking about a first cause. Multiverse is a topic that, if you know anything about it, we're actually going to come back around to it when we talk about intelligent design. Basically, it says there's some sort of mechanism or machine, although it may not be talking about like a physical nuts and bolts kind of machine, that exists outside of the universe that's popping out universes without need of an intelligent designer or creator. Yeah, something like that. But we will see why that doesn't work as we talk about it in future lessons. And then finally, what caused God? That's the question that Richard Dawkins loves. His book, The God Delusion, that's kind of his central point. Well, you Christians say that God is the cause of everything. Well, I say, what caused God? Of course, to ask that question is a misunderstanding of what we as Christians believe about God. And the question that we ask Richard Dawkins in return is, why are you talking about a created God? Because you don't believe in a created God, and I don't believe in a created God. So if for you to be talking about one is to say that you misunderstand what you're critiquing, either accidentally or on purpose. And if it's on purpose, it's a philosophical sin of straw man, of creating a straw man argument. And if he's doing it accidentally, then he needs to go back to the books and understand what it is he's critiquing. Because what we say as Christians, of course, is that God is uncaused. He is the first cause. And atheists don't escape this problem either, if it's a problem, of always being asked, what caused that? What caused that? And moving infinitely back into a regression of absurdity, because all that they can say is, in the beginning was the particles. And so matter is the infinite cause. Well, matter can't choose anything. Matter can't cause anything on its own. You need an intelligent first cause. So, therefore, this is a list of attributes that we can come up with, that we can think of, that are implied by this argument. Transcendent, he is above. outside space and time because they came into existence with the creation of the universe. He's unchangeable because which is immutable, because existence outside of time implies the absence of change. He's immaterial because the agent must be non-physical since materiality requires the potential to change. He's uncaused. He's the prime causal agent. If he's not uncaused, that means something else causes it, and that is the ultimate prime source. Exceedingly powerful, even omnipotent, you might say, to cause the universe to be able to come into existence out of nothing. And personal. Only a personal agent with will, intent, and consciousness can explain the beginning of the universe with no prior causes. At one point, there's nothing. At the next point, decides to create something. And good. The universe was designed with very complex laws which allows man to live and thrive. Now, does this prove Christian theism? No, it doesn't. This argument does not prove Christian theism. But whatever the first cause of the universe has all of these attributes. So that gets us a pretty far ways into identifying something about this person, this agent. Now, we still might be talking about Allah and Islam. So, again, we take in baby steps. But this is a pretty big step, I think. We get a lot of attributes there that are helpful in our understanding. All right, what do you think? Does this make sense? Is your brain full? these next few lessons, we do lean heavily on science. And if you don't have a background or experience in thinking about these particular things, some of these things may need a little bit more thought. But again, as I said in our first class here, you're not going to be an expert on your first exposure to this material or even necessarily retain it. And I don't expect you to. What you need to walk away from these classes with is a knowledge that there are resources, okay? All right, let me just reference my list here. We will talk next time about design in the universe, intelligent design, and what it shows us about this first cause or what we can see in the universe, okay? Let me say a quick prayer. We'll get out of here. Father, thank you for this time that we've had together and for how we can infer qualities about you through the things that we observe in the universe. Please allow these things to increase our faith and confidence in you and our confidence to witness and share and persuade with the people that we meet. In your name I pray, amen.